It's August 9th, and this is Rabbi Manny Shior.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you all for coming, as always. Hope everyone's had a lot to drink this morning, make up for a hot, dusty Tisha B'Av. Today's shiur is sponsored anonymously. So I wanted to announce that and also encourage people who are interested in sponsoring the shiur. You can sponsor it either anonymously or in somebody's name. Please speak to the OU Israel Center and they'll be happy to direct you. Okay, we are on part two of what we started last week. Let me recap for people who were not here last week or people who were here last week and don't remember what we said. We are talking about the unborn child. That's me. I'm not looking at you. I'm looking generally around the room. We're giving a couple of shirim today, the second, on the status of the unborn child in Halacha and Hashgacha. And just to recap on what we said last week. The first source, the main source that we had in the Torah last week was where two men are fighting and one injures a woman who is pregnant and she loses the child, she miscarries the child. There the Torah said there's a penalty, but the penalty is financial. As long as the woman's life is not endangered, the penalty for destroying the unborn child is a financial one, which at first sight made it look as though it may be that the destruction, if you like, the termination of a fetus is a financial issue rather than a deeper issue. However, it's not so straightforward, because we saw also last week that the Gemara is very clear, learns from a pasuk in Noach, that for a non-Jew to terminate a fetus, and we'll talk a little bit more about this week, that is murder. That is considered to be murder. It's included in the pasuk in Noach that deals with murder. And along came Tosfos in the Gemara, we saw last week, and said, well, there is no such thing as a prohibition for a non-Jewish person that is not also prohibited for a Jewish person. It must be, if it's murder for a non-Jew, it's also prohibited for a Jew. Must be. And the question is, okay, so it's prohibited for a Jew, but what prohibition? Which is the prohibition in the Torah that includes terminating a fetus? So we saw last week the famous case in 1976 where there was a baby in Shaare Tzedek who was diagnosed in 5th or 6th month pregnancy with Tay-Sachs. And a question was sent to Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. We talked about his connection with Shaare Tzedek last week. He was a rav across the road. He gave shirim in the hospital. He acted something as a posek for the young doctors there. And they asked him, can we terminate the fetus? Otherwise this child will be born with Tay-Sachs. There is no chance that it will survive more than a few years into life. And Rav Waldenberg wrote a long tshuva in response, and he said, yes, absolutely, it is permissible to terminate this pregnancy to avoid the birth of a Tay-Sachs baby. That was published, that tshuva was published, and received a very strong response from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote in a tshuva, the landmark tshuva in the Igros Moshe, absolutely not. To terminate a fetus is murder. There's no question. Just like it's murder for a non-Jew, it's also murder for a Jew. Under no circumstances may the fetus be terminated unless there is danger to the life of the mother. If there's danger to the life of the mother, we saw last week, it is permissible to terminate a fetus. Ah, if it's murder, why would you be allowed to murder one person in order to save another person? Usually you can't do that. More of that this week. So we answered and we said, no, Rav Moshe could turn around and say that a fetus, even though it is murder to terminate a fetus is a slightly lower level of life than a fully born alive person, and therefore, even though normally you can't say whose blood is redder, how do you know this life is worth more than that life, you can say that with a fetus and the mother, but you certainly can't terminate the fetus. And there was a back in order just to avoid having the baby who was a Tay-Sachs baby. And there was a back and forth between Rav Moshe and Rav Waldenberg, yes, no, and that's where we're going to pick it up today. So what were the conclusions we came to last week? We saw that according to all poskim, there is indeed a problem of terminating a fetus, but what that problem is a debate. Some say that it is murder, like Rav Moshe Feinstein said, although that's something of a chiddush, and we'll talk more about why he came to that conclusion today. Some say that it is murder. Others say no. We saw the Chavos Yare last week. It is not murder, he said. It is a Torah prohibition on terminating potential life. Just like a person is not allowed to waste even sperm in an unnecessary way. They're not allowed, because that's destruction of a potential life. So too, all the more so, an unborn child is a potential life. That would also be perhaps the prohibition. Others say no. Maybe it's a rabbinic prohibition, because it looks like murder. We saw there last week the Radvaz. Maybe it's a rabbinic prohibition. And there are various different views which differ on that. Now today, we will see that which way you jump on that question has massive implications for different cases which we'll deal with today. Can you terminate if this, if that, if the other, etc.? And we'll see it depends on which reason you give for the prohibition. There is one other option that we didn't look at last week, which is, according to some poskim, there is a prohibition of the Torah prohibition of wounding. You're not allowed to wound another person. Look in number one for a second. The Rambam brings down, we talked about this many, many moons ago when we looked at cosmetic surgery. The Rambam says the following: Asal Adam Lachbol, a person is not allowed to wound another. Bein ba'atzma, either themselves, bein b'chavero, or somebody else. V'lo chavel bilvad, not only is wounding prohibited, ela kolam maka Adam, even if you just hit someone. Adam kosher, an innocent person, the Israel of the Jewish people, bein katan, whether you're hitting a child, bein God, whether you're hitting an adult, bein ish, whether you're hitting a man, bein isha, whether you're hitting a woman. And in many ways this was quite groundbreaking, because people hit children uniformly. They felt that was their obligation almost to hit children wherever they felt it necessary. The Rambam says not so fast. Hitting a child could well be a Torah prohibition of injuring or wounding. As for women, beating of wives within marriage was absolutely standard in almost all systems up until the modern times. You only need to look at the law reports from cases in America and England up to the beginning of the 20th century. They took the view that better to shut the curtains and let the husband and wife get on with their marriage than get involved in that. The Rambam comes along at this age and says, no, that's not the Jewish approach. You're not allowed to hit a woman or a man. It makes no difference, or a grown-up or a child. Derech nitzayon, if it is in anger, you are breaking a prohibition in the Torah. Shneimar, as it says, loisosif lakato. It's very interesting pasuk about when there is a mitzvah to give lashes to someone who is guilty of a crime. You're not allowed to give extra. You're not allowed to hit him another one. Maybe the guy's a total lowlife and you just want to give him another smack. There's one for my brother-in-law or whatever it is. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. In his hira haTorah shelala hosif ha'chayta, if the Torah already prohibits extra beating of someone who is guilty, a chayta, someone who deserves it, kal v'chomer lemaka es hatzadik. All the more so, you cannot unnecessarily wound a tzaddik, someone who is not guilty. So some come along, the Maharit and others, and say that that's abortion. Even if it's not murder, and even if it's not termination of a potential life, it's definitely wounding. You're cutting someone open and you're terminating a fetus. That is unlawful wounding, according to some. The issue with that, of course, is you are allowed to hit people and to wound people where it's necessary. You're not going to turn around to a surgeon in a hospital and say, how dare you put that scalpel inside that person? You are guilty of the Torah prohibition of wounding. He will turn around and say, no, I'm not. Or she will say, it's not derech nitzayon. Derech nitzayon means in anger. This is not in anger. We're doing it for the best interests of the people involved. That's not a Torah prohibition of wounding at all. You're allowed, we said, to have cosmetic surgery in some circumstances. I'm not going through the whole shiur now. That's not unlawful wounding. So you'll just reopen the question with abortion. Well, when is abortion appropriate and when is it not? If it is appropriate, it won't be called unlawful wounding, because it'll be like an operation, and where it's not appropriate, it will. So you haven't really fully answered the question by just calling it that. Now, what stage does this kick in as a problem? When is a fetus a fetus? Now, we tend to, you know, use the labeling in medical terms of an embryo when it's in its early stages and a fetus when it's more developed. At what point does the halacha say that there's a problem getting involved? Now, there's a very interesting discussion. The Gemara in Nida, actually the Mishnah in Nida says number two. Ha'apalit yom mem. Somebody, a woman who miscarries a baby up until the 40th day. Eino chosesh shlavad. We are not concerned that what she miscarried is a blab. It is not a child. We'll see what it is in a minute. It's not a child. Leyom mem aleph, but once you hit the 41st day of gestation, teshev lezachol in a kevul anida, then she has to keep all of the halachas that flow from having a baby, the tumah for a boy, for a girl, for a nida, and all of those different things, because she had a child. But before 40 days, she didn't have a child. So what is it before 40 days? So the Gemara in Yevamos makes a very interesting statement. Here it's dealing with a different case. It's dealing with a Bat Kohen. A Bat Kohen, if you're a Kohen family and you have a daughter, the daughter's allowed to eat truma back in the day. Nowadays no one can eat truma. In order to eat truma, which of course is the first tithes that you give to the Kohen has to be tahor. And nobody today is tahor, so none of the Kohen eat truma, which is why what we do with the truma today is we really throw it away. Or, one thing you can do with truma today is you can give it to the animal that belongs to a Kohen. If you happen to have a Kohen down the road who has an animal that can eat truma, which is, as far as I'm aware, why the animals in the biblical zoo down here in Yerushalayim are all owned by Kohanim, and therefore the animals are fed truma. And if you ever thought that the animals look a little holier than the animals in San Francisco or San Diego, that's because the monkeys there are having a great diet of truma. We'll see if they do any Birkas Kohanim, but I don't think they are. I've never seen them do that. The question here is the following: if this Bat Kohen becomes pregnant from a Yisrael, let's say she didn't get married, she got pregnant from Israel, as soon as we know she's carrying the child of Israel, she can't eat truma anymore. She's disqualified from eating truma. So the Gemara wants to know, at what point do we tell her, sorry, no more truma for you? Look at number three, it says, Amar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, Ad Arbayim, until 40 days of the gestation of the embryo, Maya Ba'almahi. Maya Ba'alma. It's just fluid. All this baby is just fluid. It's not yet a baby. After 40 days, we have to tell her, I'm sorry, you're not carrying a baby, you can't eat truma anymore. Which is the same reason why in number two, we saw that a woman who miscarries, God forbid, before the 40th day, that's not called miscarrying a child, it's just bodily fluid. So that's very interesting. So does that mean that one's allowed to abort a child before 40 days gestation? If it's just fluid, it's just fluid. Meaning, let's go through the reasons. If the prohibition is murder, well, there's no concept of murdering fluid. That's not possible, so that's not a problem. If the prohibition is wounding, then there's no concept of wounding fluid, and therefore that's not a problem. But if the prohibition is not allowing a potential life to take effect, well, then that's still a problem, because if that would apply even before fertilization, that certainly applies within the first 40 days. So again, the way that you view these things will depend to a certain degree on the way that you define the prohibition of termination. And therefore, Rav Chaim Ozi Grzinski, when dealing with the issue of a pre-40 day embryo, in number 4, he says here, Masha Kosov quotes Haraso, he's writing a response to a question, the Lifnei Mem Yom Leklitato, before 40 days of gestation, the Havikamaya Ba'alma Loi Ikri Nefesh, maybe it's not even anything, it's just nothing, it's not even human, and therefore it's much less of a problem. He says, Nira, he says, I think, the Bnei Noach Einu Ne'erag Al Zeh. I agree, he says, a non-Jew who carried out an abortion would not be subject to a capital crime for an abortion of a less than 40-day pregnancy. For Gan Yisrael, and even for a Jew, Efsha De'ein Isur Min HaTorah. Efsha. He says, it's definitely downgraded. Maybe it's not a Torah prohibition, but it is a rabbinic prohibition, but it's definitely a lower level prohibition. And all the poskim agree on this, that if a woman were to come for a termination, if a test were done or issues developed, and it was less than 40 days gestation, the halachic problem of terminating is significantly lower. Now, again, I don't really need to say this again, but I will say it again. Nothing that I ever say in these shurim should be taken as a psak of any kind at all. That's clear. These things have to be taken up with a halachic authority. But this issue is very clear. There'll be less than 40 days, there is less of a problem. Yes, you had a question?
What is the criteria for 40 days?
From fertilization. From fertilization. Now, the interesting question is, when is the neshama, if you like, it put into the child? Now, that's not a halakhic question. That's a spiritual question. What is neshama? There is an interesting Gemara in Middah that says that 40 days before the Yitzirat HaVlad, now if the Yitzirat HaVlad, if the formation of the Vlad is at 40 days, it means on conception, it says that a Malach takes the new fertilized egg and takes it to Hashem and says, what will this be? Will it be rich or poor? Chacham or Tipesh, etc, etc. Now, I don't know, it's an Agadah, so you'd have to read into what that means. It's the Neshama there at that stage, later stage. Unfortunately, we can't measure neshamas, which is a problem also at the end of life. When you're taking end of life decisions and you say, well, when is a person dead? The answer is simple. When the neshama leaves the body, that's when the person's dead. The problem is, we don't have a machine that can measure that. So we have to work in other ways. We have to talk about heartbeats and breathing and brain death, etc., etc., because neshamas are very important, but we don't really understand them fully and we can't measure them. But there's no question that from birth to 40 days, it's a different status. What about even earlier? What about before implantation? Meaning an egg is fertilized, but it hasn't yet even implanted in the placenta. Is that an even lower level? And this, of course, is very relevant for what they call now the morning after pill, where a woman is concerned that she may have become pregnant for whatever reasons, and she doesn't want to be pregnant, and she wants to take a pill that will prevent implantation of the potentially fertilized. She doesn't know if she's pregnant or not yet. And that's an important point. Can she do this? So one of the issues with the morning after pill is, first of all, you don't even know if there's a pregnancy. There may not be a pregnancy. She may not have become pregnant. It's in case she became pregnant. But also there is definitely an argument that before implantation it's even less. An embryo which is not even implanted may be even less. And this is what I want to speak about next week a little bit, when I want to talk about genetically modified embryos and creation of superhumans and all of those kind of issues. What we do with embryos before they even get into a human body, which today is a big issue, frozen embryos all over the world, that may be a different question. It certainly won't be any less serious than an embryo less than 40 days, but it may be even, certainly won't be more serious, excuse me, but maybe even less serious than that. It is, of course, still serious, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, we'll see his psak later on, he allowed the morning after pill in the event that, God forbid, of a rape. Of a situation where a woman was concerned if she'd been raped that she may become pregnant, he said absolutely the morning after pill there is permitted, because in those circumstances to terminate a potential pregnancy would have been definitely allowed. But we'll talk more about that a little bit next week. A complicating factor is the following. We alluded to this last week. Can you break Shabbos to save a fetus? Because if a fetus is not really alive yet, can we break Shabbos to save a fetus? So look at the Gemara in number 5. Ha'isha she'yashva ala mashber u'meita b'shabbat. Nebuch, a woman is giving birth on Shabbos and the mother died during birth. Obviously many, many women die during birth. Now the instance of maternal mortality in birth is, thank God, extremely low. 150, 200 years ago, one in every three women in Europe, where sanitary conditions were low, one in every three women died giving birth. So, historically in the ancient world it was a little bit less than that, but still it was very common. So in Isha Shiyashva Ala Mashber, a woman is giving birth and she dies or makes up a Shabbos on Shabbos. Can we break Shabbos, not for the mother is too late, but to try and get the fetus out and save the fetus? It's not yet born, but we can call a midwife over. He has to carry on Shabbos. You have to break Shabbos on the Torah level. Mevin sakin. We are allowed to bring a knife. Umakarin et akresa, and we are allowed to operate on her umoitzin et avlat and take out the fetus. We are allowed to break Shabbos for a fetus. The question is why? Why are we allowed to break Shabbos for a fetus? Why are we allowed to break Shabbos to save a regular life? What's the reason given in the Chumash? How do we learn that out? Do you know? Oh, so that's one reason we'll see in a minute. But the usual answer is the Pasuk in the Torah says, V'chai behem. V'chai behem. You are meant to keep mitzvahs so that you can live, not so that you can die. And therefore, in order to sustain human life, we will enable people to break Shabbos. Well, if the allowance to break Shabbos is V'chai behem, and the fetus is not yet even really alive, then V'chai behem wouldn't help. Because I can save people who are alive and keep them alive, but it's not alive yet. So V'chai behem won't work. However, your suggestion will work. Because the Gemara then, the Rambam quotes both of these. The Gemara brings about 7 or 8 different reasons why you can break Shabbos to save life. Ah, I'll tell you right now. One of them is the Kaibahem, which won't help us because the baby's not alive. But this lady here suggested that in order to keep more Shabbos, you can break one Shabbos to keep more Shabbos. The Gemara says there, the Shamru B'nai Israel as a Shabbos. It says that the point is Jewish people should keep Shabbos. Break this Shabbos so that this person will be able to keep multiple future Shabboses. Which is actually very philosophically interesting, because if you take the Chaibahem, then what's more important, Shabbos or life? Life. But if you take the Shamru B'nai Israel as a Shabbos, I'm allowed to break Shabbos so that you can keep more Shabbos, what's more important, Shabbos or life? Shabbos is more important than human life. And the reason that I'm allowed to break Shabbos is just for more Shabbos, which is very interesting. Now, if you take that, your suggestion, you would be allowed to break Shabbos in order to save a fetus, because you're saving a fetus who will go on to keep hundreds and thousands of Shabboses throughout their life. And that is indeed how we pass in number 6, Afilu b'hatzalat ubar, even to save a fetus, Pachot mi ben arbaim, even if it's less than 40 days gestation, meaning it's just this maya ba'alma, it's just this fluid, we can still break Shabbos to save the life of this fluid, even though it's not alive yet. You're saving what will go on to be a person and break and keep Shabbos. She'ein bochiyas klal. It says there is no life in this fluid at all. It's just bodily fluid. But mechalel in the dad bal alochas for a Rambam. So, very the Rambam. Very interesting. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein came along and said, excuse me, if you're allowed to break Shabbos in order to save this, you're telling me that you can just abort it? How can that be? And Rabbi Valdenberg responded and said, well, what's one thing got to do with the intra? You know, well, one thing is Shabbos and one thing is different halachas. The two are not related. They're different systems. But this is it's a fascinating discussion here. But and the halacha is, indeed, that we will break Shabbos in order to save a fetus if we have to. Now, all of this is leading us to the question as to, okay, so in different scenarios, are you allowed to break, are you allowed to abort a fetus for different things? Yeah. Yes.
Before,
yes.
You're saving the fetus to be the last.
Yes.
You don't know necessarily whether that fetus is going to be Shomer Shabbos.
Correct. It's a good point. You're right. You're right. Good.
It's just alive.
Let me ask you a question. Are you allowed to break Shabbos to save the life of a Jew who is alive who does not keep Shabbos? Absolutely yes. But you'll say they don't keep Shabbos. But, and the only heter to break maybe Shabbos is to keep. The answer is Jews are eternal optimists. And even if he doesn't keep Shabbos this week, please God, he'll keep Shabbos in the future. And this Vlad also, why should we assume that the Vlad will not keep Shabbos?
Maybe another mitzvah. But let's suppose he becomes a doctor.
You know something? Good, good. That's actually a very good point, because there are some poskim that say it's not just break Shabbos so this person can keep Shabbos, but break Shabbos so this person can keep mitzvahs. And it may be there are other mitzvahs involved as well. Absolutely, 100%. So this is part of that discussion. Now, yes, sir.
But that makes sense for a fetus 8 months, 7 months, maybe today even after 20 weeks or
right.
But you know, if it is 50 days or 90 days,
right?
What are you saving?
You're saving something which potentially will keep Shabbos. If you
say that the fetus itself is keeping Shabbos as long as it's still...
No, the fetus is not keeping Shabbos. No, but if the mother goes into some kind of medical emergency, and in order to save this potential person, this baby, the embryo at this stage, we have to break Shabbos. The question is, can we or can we not break Shabbos? And the answer is, yes, we can.
That is fine if you're able to save the fetus.
Yes.
But Rambam, of Rambam, they were not able to save the fetus.
Well, in this case, in number 5, they were. In the case of a woman who's giving birth, you're right, they weren't able to intervene in early stages like we can, but the principle is the same, that until the baby is born, it's not born, it's not yet alive. Until the head has emerged, we said that, and we'll see that in a minute as well. In the case in number 5, the baby has not come out at all.
But we're talking about two different cases. We're talking about 40, a pre-40
day. Good. 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 So let me ask you the question. So in the case of the Gemara number 5, why are we allowed to break Shabbos in order to save the fetus, which is like fully grown but has not yet come out? Why? Why are we allowed to break Shabbos?
I assume that you can
Yeah, but it's not yet a person. Everyone agrees. For example, everyone agrees you could kill this fetus to save the life of the mother. Everyone agrees on that. It's not yet a full-blown person. So why are we allowed to save, to break Shabbos to save this fetus? The answer is because we want this fetus to be able to keep Shabbos. It's not the chai bahem. The chai bahem is not alive yet. We could kill it to save the mother. It's not fully alive. It's in order to let it keep more Shabbos. And if that's the logical svara, then what difference does it make if it's 9 months, 8 months, 6 months, 5 days?
Because 5 days is not viable.
It doesn't matter about viability. We can make it viable. Okay, it's not viable now if it came out, but that's not the point. We can do something that will enable ultimately this fetus to be viable.
I think the confusion is
yes.
A fetus that was about to be born.
Yes.
In the case of the 40 days or 50 days,
yes.
It's not about to be born.
Correct.
I think that's what's confusing people. They don't
correct.
The 40 days is about to be born.
Obviously, not the 40 days is about to be born. Okay, just to clarify, the 40-day fetus is obviously not going to be born. It's not viable even by any stretch of imagination. Yet, who knows what's going to be in 100 years when they may be able to pop it in an incubator and keep it going for the whole 9 months. That, I wouldn't put money on the fact that won't happen. Of course, you're right, and it's good to clarify, this baby is not going to be born now and is not viable, but if we intervene, it will remain in utero, and it will grow, and it will be born, and it will keep Shabbos. And on that basis, we're allowed to break Shabbos. Now, let's bring in a very interesting Rambam. Because much ink has been spilt on the following Rambam. We all know you're allowed to kill the fetus to save the mother's life. We know that. Why? So let's go over two sources that we saw last week, and then we'll bring in a famous Rambam. Number 7. Ha'isha shehi makshalele, a woman who is having difficulty giving birth, terrible difficulty, and she's in life-threatening danger. Machatken et avlad, we're allowed to abort the fetus. B'me'ah, inside her, u'moitzino se'i varim e'varim, and extract the fetus limb by limb, even though we have to terminate this fully grown fetus. Mitnei shechayeh, kolmim l'chayav, because the life of the mother comes before the life of the fetus. Yatzer rubai, once the majority of the fetus has come out, like we said last week, either a breech birth, the most of the body is out, or in a normal birth, most of the head's out. Ein noigim bo, you can't touch it. She'ein dochin nefesh, mipnei nefesh, because we never kill one person to save another person. So once the baby is out, majority out. It's considered to be emerged. It's a full-blown person. We cannot kill it to save the life of the mother. But before it comes out, we can. Why? Says Rashi. Number 8, over the page. Bechol zman shelo yatsa la'avir. Because as long as the baby has not yet come out into the world, ha'avir ha'olam, lav nefesh hu. It's not really yet a nefesh. It's a pre-nefesh. The nitan lahargo lahatzelet imo, and you're allowed to kill it to save the mother. Aval yatsa rosha, but once the head comes out, ein nogim bo lahargo, you can't kill it, you can't touch it. Dehavale kiyalud, because now it's as if it's born. The ein dochin nefesh mitnei nefesh. Okay, we don't kill one person to save another. Okay, seems very clear. The Rashi says the reason we can kill the embryo is to save the mother because the embryo is pre-knife and the mother is alive. The embryo is not yet a nefesh. There is a Gemara which raises the question of a roideth. Look at number 9. We didn't see this last week. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Yatsa Rosha, Ein Nogim Bo, the same halacha, once the head has come out, we don't touch the baby. The fisha ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. We don't push one life off for another. So the Gemara now asks the question, am I? Why not? Roidehu? And someone raised that question last week of the roideth. It's a roideth. What is a roideth? We talked about this 2 weeks ago. If one person is chasing another person to kill it, we should be allowed to kill the pursuer. In fact, we are obligated to kill the pursuer. So why do I even care that the baby is already halfway out and is quote-unquote born? That baby is threatening another person in a situation where A threatens B. I have a mitzvah, intervene and kill A to save B. So the baby is a roideth. So why do I care if it's half in and half out? So the Gemara answers, no, Shani Hassan, it's not really a roideth. De mishamaya karatfila. It's not the baby that's trying to pursue her. It's Shamayim that's trying to pursue her. Meaning this is a natural process. A Rodef is normally not a natural process. And normally a Rodef is one person who is intervening actively to kill another, so I have to jump in first and stop that from happening. But this is the baby is just doing what it's programmed to do in the normal natural course of events. I'm not allowed to treat the baby as a Rodef. Now, it's not because the baby's innocent. The Catholics talk about the baby being innocent. It's nothing to do with innocence. Even if a Rodef is innocent, I still kill a Rodef. The case that I outlined a couple of weeks ago. Let's say there's a hunter in the forest who is about to shoot a deer, but I realize that by mistake he's not aiming at a deer but he's aiming at a person. So it's a completely innocent act. The hunter doesn't know what's going on. I nevertheless am obliged to treat him like a Rodef. I have to kill the hunter to save the person. He's innocent. It doesn't matter. Or a child who is a Rodef. If a child thinks they're playing around with an air gun and they're really carrying a real gun, and I realize the child is about to shoot somebody, I have to kill the child to save that person. The child is a Rodef. So why is this baby different? It's not because it's innocent. It's because it's natural. There's a natural process. So the Gemara dismisses it and says, no, it's not a Rodef. You can't use that argument. If the baby's come out, then you can't kill the baby to save the mother. Okay. So now look at how the Rambam rules in number 10. And as I said, books have been written about this Rambam. You are not allowed to take pity on a Rodef. Nebuch, it could be an innocent Rodef, like I described, a regular Rodef, a child's playing with a gun, they're about to shoot someone. You can't take pity, you have to act. Therefore the rabbis taught, a woman who is impregnant, who is having difficulty giving birth, you are allowed to cut up the child inside her, either a medical abortion, a chemical abortion, or a physical abortion. Why are you allowed to kill the baby? Because the baby is like a roider. The baby's trying to kill her. But if the baby's put out its head, we can't then touch the baby. And this is the natural way of the world. What is the Rambam doing? Didn't the Gemara raise the question of Rodef and say, oh, maybe the baby's a Rodef, maybe we can still kill the baby because it's a Rodef even when it's emerged? And the Gemara said, no, this baby is not a Rodef. A Rodef is someone who intervenes. This is a natural process. Okay, so we've dismissed Rodef. Now comes the Rambam and says, you know why you're allowed to kill a baby inside the womb? Because the baby's a Rodef. Number one, didn't we just say that that's not true? Didn't the Gemara dismiss that? It raised it and dismissed it. Why is the Rambam bringing it back? And number two, if the Rambam's so convinced the baby is a Rodef, so why indeed can't the baby, you kill the baby even after he comes out? If it's a Rodef, it's a Rodef. This Rambam is very problematic. Yes? Oh, what is the Rambam saying? Good. So the first thing is, the Rambam doesn't say it is a Rodef. The Rambam could have said, Mipnei Shehu Rodef Acharei Lahoriga. And he says, Ker Rodef. It's a kind of Rodef, which brings the Rambam back into the mainstream, if you like, of the Gemara, because the Gemara said it's not a regular Rodef, it's a kind of natural Rodef. So that's a very, very good point. The Rambam may indeed fit totally with the Gemara. And also it may be what the Rambam is saying, and this raises some fascinating practical points, is as follows. Why am I allowed to kill a baby in the womb to save the mother? So a fetus. So Rashi said, because it's not yet alive. So Rambam says, well, maybe because it's not yet alive, and because it's a kind of Rodef. It's a kind of Rodef. Now, what difference does it make if you introduce this issue of Rodef? Meaning, once the baby's emerged, then it's a full-blown person, and I can't kill it, because the fact that it's like a Rodef is not enough, because it's not a real Rodef, it's a kind of Rodef. But while it's still a fetus, it's enough that it's a kind of Rodef, because it's not yet fully born. He uses both. So if you introduce the Rodef principle, you introduce an interesting case. What happens if someone is an indirect Rodef? Meaning they're not directly killing. Let's give a scenario. A and B are lining up for a life-saving inoculation. There's a plague, and everybody, God forbid, is dying. It's okay. It's everybody, God forbid, is dying, and you need this inoculation to save your life. And there's two people in the line, and you're number two, and number one goes up for the inoculation, and they tell him, oh, you're lucky, you've got the very last one. After you, there are none left. So you're number two. So how do you relate to number one? Is he a Rodef? Meaning number one is the only thing that comes between you and the inoculation. Are you going to turn around and say, this guy's a Rodef, I'm allowed to take him out because he's threatening my life? And the answer is no, you can't do that, because he's not really a Rodef. He's indirectly threatening your life, but he's not threatening your life. He's just taking the last inoculation, and through that you won't end up getting the inoculation. That's not called a Rodef. So now in a pregnancy, what happens if the baby is not threatening the mother's life, but the mother has another medical condition which is independent of the baby, and because of the pregnancy that is exacerbating the problems of this other medical condition? The mother has diabetes, or the mother has something else. And the doctors say, it's not the baby that's causing the problem. It's the fact that you have this other illness. Now the pregnancy is making that illness worse, and it's threatening your life. Now that's a very interesting shaila. Is that baby, can you now kill that baby? Because if you said, according to Rashi, that the baby's not yet alive, okay, so the baby's not yet alive, I'm allowed to set one life against another. Soft, the mother's life is being endangered, so you can kill the fetus to save the mother. But if you say, like the Rambam, that it's based on Rodef, well, Rodef is a whole new thing now. Maybe that's not good enough for a Rodef. Maybe the baby's not threatening the mother's life. Maybe the diabetes is threatening the mother's life. And what the baby's got really nothing directly to do with it. And therefore that's going to change the nature of the Shiloh if you bring in Rodef. I'll give you another example. What happens if the doctors turn around and say, we're not sure if this baby's going to cause a life-threatening problem. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. 20% chance, 50% chance, 9% chance. I mean, the doctors are never quite that precise, but they turn around. Sometimes they can say, this baby is going to kill you, you have to deal with it. But often they'll say, no, actually we're not sure. What if somebody, if indeed it's not yet alive, okay, so it's Suffolk Nefesh of the mother. If the baby's not alive and the mother is alive, and there's a chance that the baby might kill the mother, according to Rashi, you'll say, fine, so terminate the fetus. We're not taking chances. We don't take chances with life. But if it's a Rodef, again, if you bring in Rodef, what does that do? What if someone is a maybe Rodef? How does that work with a Rodef? What if someone's got a gun and they're just firing randomly? Okay? And there's a chance that the bullet might hit somebody. Is that still called a Rodef? Or is that not called a Rodef? That's a really interesting question. So I'm just trying to show you how if the Rambam brings in this concept of Rodef, he actually brings in some new factors into the equation that mean that we won't necessarily be able to answer the Shiloh the same way. Because if it's not the baby that's threatening, but it's another disease that's threatening, or if the baby may threaten, may not threaten, the Rodef principle may come in and actually change the dynamic. So let's summarize so far, and then we'll go on. Look in on page 4, please. Conclusions so far. So I brought you three conclusions. Again, not for Psak Halacha, but I brought you three conclusions to clarify where the fetus is causing a definite danger to the mother's life. All authorities allow a Jewish doctor to abort the fetus at any stage up to the birth. A non-Jewish doctor we saw is more problematic, but a Jewish doctor, yes.
The thing that's really problematic,
yeah,
is what we heard from Rambam.
Yes, 800 years ago.
Right. Rashi.
900 years ago. Yes.
The medical thing in those days was very, very primitive.
Well, compared to today, yes, definitely.
So it's all right for them to talk about it, but it doesn't mean what's going on now.
Well, first of all, I don't think we should... of course, you're right. There is light and day, night and day between then and now. But we shouldn't assume that they were like in the Stone Age, in the time of Rambam and the Rashi. The Rambam wrote detailed treatises on pharmacology, on potions, and all sorts of different things. And he treated... He was the official doctor for the Sultan of Cairo. And therefore, medicine was quite advanced, not obviously to the same degree. And therefore, they did have the ability to intervene, to kill fetuses to save mother's life. Maybe their diagnosis was less strong, but we make a mistake if we think that they were living in like the Flintstones. It wasn't like that. In some ways the Rambam's medical and certainly dietary advice is making a little bit of a comeback, and it may be that some of the things that the Rambam advised us to have to stay healthy, doctors today are very good at curing people who are sick, but they're not as good at keeping people feeling good. One doctor actually once said to me when I told him for the fifth time that I didn't feel well, I made the mistake of having a British doctor, they're not very sympathetic, and he said to me, my job is not to make you feel well, my job is to tell you if you're ill, and you're not. If you don't feel well, then speak to someone else about that. Okay, I hear that, there's a certain grain of truth in that, but I think we shouldn't dismiss the Rambam's medical knowledge, but of course it's different for today, but the principles apply the same way. Maybe we can do more to save a fetus today, but he could still do other things. So as I said, we can certainly kill the fetus to save the mother. Where the fetus is a secondary threat, then that is a different debate. I brought you before because of the Rodip issue, and so too where the fetus is a possible danger, some people will not be as quick to allow an abortion as if it's a definite danger. Again, like we said, less than 40 days the baby, the answer will always be more lenient if it's less than 40 days, and if a fetus is in those early stages, then yes, most poskim will definitely allow it to be aborted if there is even a question of a health to the mother. Let me just raise one interesting question before we look at the other practical ones. What happens if the fetus have emerged, and therefore you say you can't kill it to save the mother, but what if the fetus will die anyway? Meaning, if the fetus will survive and it's already emerged, then we say, okay, we can't kill one person to save another. But what if the doctors say, look, this fetus is never going to make it anyway, there's nothing to talk about. So if we don't do anything, they'll both die. But at least if we intervene now and kill the fetus, which is anyway doomed, we can save the life of the mother. Is that different? So it may be a very sick fetus, it may be a very ill baby, and the doctors give it no chance, and at least they can save the life of the mother. Yes?
Well, there's been no chance. They mean within a week, within a day, within a month?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But is there a situation in which we can indeed sacrifice one person in order to save the life of another in special circumstances? And if you look here in number 11, the Tiferes Yisrael brings in an interesting wild card, which I just want to mention, which is Sheva ben Bichri. Talk about him in a second. So the Tiferes Yisrael says the following: if the mother is going to die, if you can save the blood, or if you can save both, if the child will live, then you can't kill the child once it's born to save the mother. But if you don't intervene, then they'll both die anyway. Meaning, what's the point of not killing this fetus that's already born? They're both going to die. Maybe you can be more lenient in killing the fetus, to at least save the mother. Like Sheva ben Bichri. Who was Sheva ben Bichri? Sheva ben Bichri was the rebel against David HaMelech, who holed himself up in a city, and Yoav, David's commander, came along and said, give us Sheva ben Bichri, or we'll destroy the whole town. Are they allowed to hand over Sheva ben Bichri? Now, normally, you cannot hand over one person to save another. You can't. Look in number 12. The Yerushalmi says, Bnei Adam Shehayu Mahalchim Baderech, Upagu Lehem Goyim. People are on the road and they are attacked by highwaymen. The Amru, and the highwaymen say to them, Tsunu lanu echad mikem, give us one of your number, the Narogatar, will kill him or her. The in love, but if not, Hari Anuhorgin et Kulchem, will kill you all. Hand over one person, we're happy to kill one person, but if you don't hand over that one person, you'll all die, including that person. Can you hand them over? Says the Gemara, no. Afilu kulam ne'eragim, even if they're all going to die, lo yimsru nefesh achat b'Yisrael. You cannot hand one person over in order to save the group. But yichdu lahem echad. But if they pointed, it's him that we want. Kagon Sheva ben Bichri, like in the case of Sheva ben Bichri, yimsru otam, then they are allowed to hand him over or her over, the lo yaru. And you know, and they're not, they don't have to be killed. Why? Because that person is not just a regular person. He's a marked man. He's a dead man walking because he's been identified already. Now, the question is there anybody? That's only if they're guilty. If they come and say, we want him because he's guilty, you can hand him over. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Afa pisha eim chayav misa kasher b'mikveh," even though he's not guilty. So Rabbi Yochanan will say, and unfortunately, if you read the terrible responsa from the Holocaust that came out, Rav Ostri, who wrote up all those volumes of questions that he was asked, this kind of question came up. Tragically, many situations where the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, said, "You'll hand over these people or we'll kill all of you." And the question often arose, are they allowed to hand them over? Did they identify which people? Are they just randomly asking for people? And this will make a difference. Now, in our case, it could be, therefore, says the Tiferes Yisrael, that the baby, if the baby is going to die anyway, even if it's born, then we will intervene. We'll be more happy to intervene to kill the fetus even after it's been born in order to save the life of the mother. And it's fascinating that Sheva ben Bichri, which is a very different case, is brought in this circumstance. Let's finish off in the last 12 minutes by going through a few practical scenarios. When do the poskim say that you can and you cannot perform abortions, under what circumstances? So let's deal with four scenarios. Let's deal with a deformed fetus. Let's deal with it to improve the mother's health. Let's talk about to improve the mother's mental health. And then let's talk about the situation of a mamzer situation. The deformed fetus, that was the case that came up in 1976 with Rav Waldenberg, where you had a mother carrying a Tay-Sachs baby. Are you allowed to terminate a fetus if you identify that the fetus has a very severe deformity or health genetic problem, etc.? So we saw it depends on the reason that abortion is prohibited. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said that the prohibition is murder, the answer is no. You cannot murder a fetus, as he would put it, in order to avoid the birth of a severely disabled child. But Tzitz Eliezer, who understands that it's not murder, it's one of the other prohibitions. Okay? He says yes, because if it's one of the other prohibitions, it may be that in cases of need, certainly if it's a rabbinic prohibition, or if it's the prohibition on unnecessarily destroying potential life, well, maybe this is necessary, it's not unnecessarily destroying life. The Tzitz Eliezer permitted it. What's very interesting, if you look at their arguments, the Tzitz Eliezer wrote back to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he says, "I don't understand. You've kind of ignored all of these precedents as to why all of these authorities do not consider abortion to be murder. How can you just ignore those and say clearly that it's murder?" And Rav Moshe Feinstein, interestingly, writes back, and he says, in different places he writes, "That's not the way I do things." And you have, and I'm not going into this in detail now, a meta-halachic debate here between the way that different poskim pask and shilas. That Tzitz Eliezer is much more likely to weigh up all the weights of opinion, look at all the different poskim, Rav Avadi Yosef is very similar in the way he does things in this way, and look and weigh it all up and say the overwhelming weight of opinion goes down this road, etc. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a Kabbalah, he has a Masorah from the Vilna Gaon, from Rav Chaim Volozhin. He doesn't do things that way. He doesn't look at how many people say this and how many people say this. He goes right back into the heart of the sugya. He learns out the Gemaras the way he learns them, and then he paskens the way he understands the halacha to be. That means he's going against this and he's going against. Okay, so he's allowed to do that. As long as he doesn't go against the Gemara itself, he's allowed to overrule even the Shulchan Aruch, etc. This is a bigger conversation, a shir in and of itself, as to how Psak Halacha works, but you have a fundamental difference between Rav Moshe, who is learning differently, than Rav the Tzitz Eliezer. The Tzitz Eliezer is looking at the weight of precedence and opinion. Rav Moshe is looking at the Gemaras and learning them the way he understands them and saying, this is the Halacha, and that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's what it is, which is a very interesting idea. So in the event of a deformed fetus, it depends on who you ask. If you ask someone who follows Rav Moshe, you will get the answer no. If you ask someone who follows the Tzitz Eliezer, you will get the answer yes. In practice, most poskim today are somewhere in the middle, which means they'll permit abortion for certain grave abnormalities, but preferably in early stages, definitely preferably before 40 days, etc. And of course the mental health of the mother has to also be taken into account. Interestingly, as far as I'm aware, even though Rav Moshe Feinstein said not to abort the baby, this mother of this particular case became pregnant again with a second baby, and the doctors again said that there was a chance that this was a Tay-Sachs baby. And she became very psychologically depressed. And the second time round, the second pregnancy, Rav Moshe said that you could terminate the pregnancy. Not because of the deformed child, but because of the suicide risk of the mother's mental health, which we'll get to in a minute. So it's interesting that these ideas play out in different ways. I brought you a number 13. Rav Steinberg actually summarizes the positions of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who again is somewhere in between these. Rav Shlomo Zalman, you can see what he says here. He says, Rav Auerbach prohibits the abortion of a taste fetus, that he didn't allow, but allows the abortion of an anencephalic fetus, which is that's the brain issue, right? The brain issue. Right, exactly. He says in cases of multi-fetal pregnancy, such as quadruplets or more, he permits the selective abortion of some of the fetuses to save the mother and the other fetuses, which we'll get a little bit more to next week. Rav Auerbach rules, he says that an anesthesiologist is forbidden to give anesthesia to a woman for an abortion that is halakhically prohibited, even if he may lose his job. That's very interesting. That's a litany iver issue. It says if the abortion is not allowed, even the person administering the anesthetic is not allowed to do that because he is, if you like, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind of allowing this abortion. So even if he loses his job. He says an expert in ultrasound should not perform an ultrasound examination for a forbidden abortion, but need not lose his job because of it. Again, each of these is a whole tshuva in and of itself. He says, finally, Rav Auerbach permits an autopsy of an aborted fetus after repeated miscarriage in order to determine the reason for the repeated miscarriage. And I've referred you there to the Nishmat Abraham, the Nishmat Abraham, Rabbi Abraham. Abraham, he goes through in great detail the big Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman, all of these issues. Fine, so that's in terms of a deformed fetus, different opinions, different approaches. What about the mother's health? What about if the doctors say there's nothing wrong with your fetus, but we're worried that if you go through with the pregnancy, you yourself will be left very ill or with a permanent disability after it. Rav Ben Zion Uziel, interestingly, was asked the following question many years ago. A woman was told by the doctors that she was carrying a healthy baby, but because of other medical issues, if she had the baby, she would become profoundly deaf without any way of curing it. Is she required to become deaf in order to avoid aborting the fetus? And in that particular case, Rav Uziel actually permitted carrying out the abortion to prevent the mother becoming permanently deaf. What is that based on? So again, it depends on the reason. What will we allow to save health? Well, murder? Definitely not. If you hold like Rav Moshe Feinstein, there is no way that you will allow an abortion in order to assist the health or pain of the mother. However, if the issues are the other issues, unnecessarily wasting seed or life, well, maybe it's not unnecessary if you're doing it for very good reasons. Or what about wounding? There is no prohibition at all to wound in order to make someone healthier. That's what we do every time we have an operation. And therefore, again, it really depends on who you ask on these issues as to whether you will get a heter or not for the abortion. And again, before 40 days, things will always be more lenient. Let's look at the last couple of cases. What about mental health? Are we interested in mental health? And the answer is, absolutely we are. And the Gemara even raises this. Look at this very interesting and quite famous case of the Gemara number 14. Miyaldin Esa Isha. When you're helping to a woman to give birth, says the Gemara in Shabbos, you're allowed to break Shabbos to help her give birth. That we all know. You can break Shabbos to save her life. You can break Shabbos to save the baby's life. Although most births are not that dangerous, they are potentially dangerous, but they're not actually life-threatening, so we minimize breaking Shabbos for birth wherever we can. I mean, you have to take sensible precautions and take sensible measures. I once read a book, I don't remember who wrote it, which is probably a good thing, but I kid you not, it's said in this book that because we have to minimize Chilul Shabbos for giving birth, because most women who give birth do not have danger in their giving birth, therefore if a woman feels that she is giving birth, rather than driving to the hospital on Shabbos, she should ride on a bicycle. I thought that the image was very interesting, and I suppose on some kind of abstract halakhic level, it does make sense. but I don't know if anyone would really suggest in any sensible way that a woman whose waters have broken and feels in contractions, she should be on a bike riding. Maybe she shouldn't be driving either, is the truth, because of the safety element, but we do break Shabbos where we have to. I teach Hilchos Shabbos in the seminaries, and I actually think one of the most practically useful classes I give in the whole year is the class on how to give birth on Shabbos sensibly, and I'm sure there's a lot of other things go on as well in the year which are very useful as well, but that's the one years later when I say to people, do you remember anything I taught you, say, oh yes, I had 3 babies on Shabbos and it came in very handy. Anyway, but I'm sure Borer and Bishel comes in handy as well. You also had a baby on Shabbos?
No. Put a basket on the bottom.
Oh yeah, pannier on the side. But, yeah, you can go with it. You can take that forward. Anyway, have a look. Miyaldin et ha'isha. We definitely help a woman to give birth on Shabbos, even if we have to break Shabbos. Amamar. Im ha'itat shricha l'ner. If she needs the light turned on, chaveret ha'madalekit la. Asaner. Then her friend will turn the light on. If we need to turn the light on, we'll turn the light on. So the Gemara says, Pshita, obviously. I mean, you've just told me that you'll break Shabbos for a woman who's giving birth if necessary. Of course you'll turn the light on. Why do you have to give me this extra chidush, you'll turn the light on? That goes without saying. So the Gemara says, no. Loit tzricha b'summa. We need this extra halacha for the case of a blind woman. Maudetema, what might you have thought? Kaven de loichazia, since she won't know if you turn the light on, asur, then you can't turn the light on, meaning she's giving birth, and she's blind, totally, and she won't know if the light's on. And she says to you, is the light on? Is the light on? Can you see what you're doing? Is everything okay? And the light's, let's say, not on. So maybe we should just lie to her and say, don't worry, the light's on, everything's fine. Meaning, if she's happy, she's happy. Why do we have to, if we think we can do without the light on, why do we have to make break Shabbos? Because she wants the light on. You might have thought that. Kamash malan, no. Ituvi mitzvah daita. If you turn the light on, that will make her more relaxed. She'll work out somehow if the light's on or not, and because of the mental anguish that she's got, she's worried that the light's not on, even though she can't even see if the light's on, you turn the light on anyway, even though she's blind. Which is absolutely fascinating, because we're worried for her mental health. And by the way, Poskim will say that if a woman's giving birth on Shabbos and she has to go in an ambulance or a car or someone drive her, can someone else get in the car with her on Shabbos? And the answer is absolutely. If she says that she needs that person in the car, and she without that person in the car she's worried and upset, absolutely that person, because the person get in the car, must get in the car, because her mental state, her psychological state is very, very important. And therefore we definitely take account of mental issues. In fact, in many ways, mental issues are even more serious than physical issues. I brought you in a different context. This is talking about a cosmetic issue, nothing to do with birth, in number 15. It's asking about a man who has very unsightly scabs on his face. And it's talking about whether the man can go to some kind of a beauty parlor and have them removed because he doesn't like the way he looks. So there's a problem of lo yilbash, of beged isha. A man is not allowed to do things which are inherently feminine. And you might turn around and say to the guy, well, you know, why do you care what you look like? You look a bit scarred, so you look like a scarred man. You can live with it, it's fine. That we might say to him. And the Gemara says that if he's in pain, then for sure he can have taken off. And Tosfos says that in ein lotzar, but if he's not in pain, acher, other than the pain, elikashemit bayesh, he's embarrassed. Leilech bein bnei Adam, because he's embarrassed at the way he looks. It's not just that he'd like to look smoother and have nicer skin. Maybe that's a problem of beged isha, as it were. But he's actually psychologically disturbed by the way he looks. Shari. Then it's absolutely fine, says Tosfos. De'ein l'chatzar gadol mizeh. There is no pain more serious than psychological pain. And that was before the days of psychology, which is very interesting. And therefore the psychological state of the mother is very important. Again, will that permit an abortion? So if there is a real assessment of suicide risk, yes it will, according to everybody, because then there's a danger of life of the death of the mother. If it's another kind of mental imbalance, then again it'll depend on who you ask. If you ask someone who follows Rav Moshe Feinstein, then you're not likely to get a yes. But if you ask somebody who follows some of the other opinions, that's more likely. The issue of a mamzer, I haven't got time to get into now. A mamzer is a full-blown Jew in every respect, whether you can abort or can't abort for the mamzer. This is very similar in many ways to the situation of a rape, God forbid, situation, which we saw before, that in early stages the poskim were willing to be more makel on that, but in late stages not so clear. But that's, we'll have to leave it. But next time, please God, I want to take us away from this specific topic. I think we've covered abortion in some detail. We needed two sessions to do it, but hopefully we've got a bigger picture. Next time I want to look more into the modern technology of, you know, bionic people, as it were, creating genetically modified embryos and customizing embryos, etc. This is something we can do, choosing genders. Please God, I hope to do that next week. Okay, have a great week. One second, sorry, I just need to do this. Okay.
About half an hour before Shabbat, 2 years ago, my friend knocked on the door, gave me the keys to the car. My son was in the army, rented an ATV.